We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Right. Lots of great questions here today. Let's get up here from Aiden Benami has a 2-part question.
It was interesting that to hear Dylan Faison say what makes him a great wide receiver is his ability to dodge tackles and find the open field because that's what they excel at in lacrosse. Once he said that, you can see that in Jordan's game, in his after the catch ability.
It's interesting. The point he was making is lacrosse actually helps make you a better wide receiver. And I had prior to Jordan Faison, in watching the lacrosse team last year, I don't have a lot of knowledge base on that. I don't know enough about the different lacrosse positions. I've said that about soccer. I've said, because I've always felt like you have to have great quickness. I mean, you have to have endurance, but you have to have great feet. Your hand-eye coordination, your hand, you know, foot-eye coordination needs to be exceptional. If you're a really good lacrosse player, I could teach you to be a great route runner. I don't know if you can catch the ball or not, but, you know, you went from a sport that's like, don't use your hands ever to your, it's like the most important thing you have. I mean, but I can guarantee you'd be a good route runner, you know. But as I watch more lacrosse, you're like, dude, this makes total sense. Yeah. Like you can't avoid contact, but you have to look to like maneuver your body to get through the contact. So the contact isn't as straight head on and straight on. It's a lot translated. It makes total sense. And I wouldn't have known that a few years ago because I just didn't know enough about lacrosse, but he's absolutely correct. Cause what you have to do is it's not just about dodging people. It's about being able to, yeah, because you're not going to avoid contact in lacrosse. It's about body positioning to avoid the stick hitting your hand or to, you know, to get knocked off course in a certain way. It's the same thing as what you do when you talk about getting a guy a ball on a crossing route or a now screen or an over route where you're going to get hit. But how do you make it to where your moves are such that you are able to get as get that contact isn't as strong, that it brings you down. And it also, you know, this sport is one that, as I've watched it more, you have to have great agility to be a scorer in lacrosse. Like, it looks like there's some position, I may be wrong, that it's more of a like vertical type of thing, you know, like you're kind of just a sprinter and all that, but like the guys that are around the net trying to score and defend scores, those guys have a great change of direction to be good at it. I mean, really good change of direction.
Yeah.
And the hand-eye coordination too is phenomenal to, you know, like I tried to actually catch a lacrosse ball once. It wasn't pretty. I'm just going to be real with you,
Sean. Hey, my godson plays lacrosse here in Chicago, brother. I just watched him play at 40 degrees last week. I'm like, no, I'm glad you did it, because I would have no interest in running in shorts in 40 degrees.
Does he go to a private school?
No, it's a public school.
Okay, because where I grew up, where I'm from, only the private schools had lacrosse. I'm curious if they have it more now, but yeah, like in Virginia Beach and Norfolk, they didn't have
it. Yeah, none of they didn't have it.
You either went to a private school like Norfolk Academy or you played club.
Yeah, it's a prominent public school, but
okay.
Yeah.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it, 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
What is the biggest improvement each offensive online player needs to make in order to start or take their game to the next level?
Jagasaw, it's about consistency. Just, you know, assignment consistency, footwork. Billy Shrouth, it's about pad level and driving his feet. Ashton Craig, it's about pad level and driving his feet. Pat Coogan, it's about consistent footwork. because his footwork's all over the place, and he's not a kid that can afford to not have his feet in the ground. He needs to be a great technician to be successful. Tosh Baker, it's about pad level, honestly, and learning to strike more as far as just kind of placing his hands. Emil Wagner, it comes down to he's got to find a way to anchor better in pass pro. Because I was explaining this to a buddy of mine the other day. Tosh's weight problem doesn't actually affect him in the run game. You go back and watch when he was coming in off the bench, and you watch him. He can move people because he's a strong, powerful kid. When he gets in trouble is in pass pro, because he's now sinking and retreating, and that allows guys to get into him, and now his lower body problems become a problem. His lower body lack of weight becomes a problem, yeah. Because not just balance, but he can't anchor as well. It's like that. Right. It's like that dude you see at the gym that never misses like curl day or bench day, but hasn't squatted a day in his life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? And he's got this jacked up upper body, but if like he'd like blow over in a windstorm, you know what I mean? Like Emil naturally has a little bit of that, because he just genetically, he just doesn't have that wide hips, the big butt, the thick thighs, like a lot of linemen do, the thick calves where they can kind of anchor and hold their ground. I've said it before, Emil looks more like a power forward than he does a right tackle. And that's something that he's going to have to, that's where it's got to get better, because it impacts him in the pass game. So being able to anchor and play with the same power in the pass game as he does in the run game. And if he can figure that out, Emil's got a chance to be a really good player. Because that's what's funny, is like, I think there's this thought, well, can he move people in the run game? I'm actually not worried about that. I mean, there's going to be some guys that give him some. I'm worried about, can he hold up in the pass and pass pro in that regard, is the bigger issue. Younger guys, I mean, I'll just stick to the six guys that are really battling for starting. Oh, well, Rocco's just got to get his conditioning. He's got to get better. He's got to move his feet better. Like when Rocco comes off and is just knows where he's going and his feet are good, he can move people. It's when he has to change direction and he's not as light on his feet, and he's just got to get a little bit more agile. And he's got a chance to be a good player. Those are the guys that I'll focus on more so for right now.
Yeah. And the profile is changing from a size standpoint, but that doesn't mean the athleticism is getting less.
Right.
I want to point that out. These are big athletic players that Notre Dame is going after, which might yield itself to a run game that is a lot more diverse than what we've seen previously, whether it's inside zone, outside zone. You talked about maybe not seeing as much pin and pull as we saw, maybe getting back the buck sweep a little bit. So that's what I'm looking forward to, like the ability to run effectively and just as strong out of 11 personnel as you are in 12 and 13,
yeah,
you know.
And that's something that people will see in this breakdown that I'm going to do, that they were much better running out of 11 personnel. And then at Notre Dame in 15, they were very good running out of 11 personnel. So we'll get to some of that stuff. You know, what's wild about this game, Sean, as I'm kind of watching it, they're dominating Ole Miss right now. Hannah Hidalgo's not playing poorly. She's just not dominating. She's got like 9 points. She only shot the ball like five or six times. Like Maddie is going off.
Yeah.
Maddie is dominating right now in this game. Sonya's doing her thing again. And they're just kind of getting some all around scoring. Like Nat Marshall's even like that. Nat Marshall had a score, or they had a first half. They went on a break and she got the ball slashing to the lane. As soon as she caught it, she kicked it out to Anna DeWolf for a three. She got five assists. She only got 4 points, but she's got five assists because she's getting those outlet passes to the shooters. So
love it. Yeah, I love it.
It's been
Hannah. Keep that monster game in your back pocket. We're gonna need it.
But that's the thing, Sean. Like earlier in the year when they were not playing as well, if she didn't go off, they couldn't win.
Right.
It was her and Maddie, and if they didn't play well, they couldn't win. Because for part of that, Sonya was out. And then when Sonya was back, she wasn't back. Like getting Sonya Citron looking like she did in the ACC tournament and in the first round was huge, because now Hannah doesn't have to feel like I got to do all this. And Maddie doesn't have to feel like if I don't go off, we can't win.
Right.
I didn't think Hannah played that well in the ACC tournament. Like not like she did in the regular season, which was huge. I think it was a huge confidence builder. Like, hey, we don't need Hannah to be Superman to beat people.
But she's still impactful.
Oh,
Because teams have to pay attention. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is she wasn't out there going for like 26, 10, and 9.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Her shot wasn't falling. But the thing is, you if you don't have help in your score, you can't be impactful. You get some steals and whatnot. But because she doesn't have to carry the team now, Sonya can go off. Maddie can go off. Anna DeWolf is – because Anna DeWolf was banged up for part of the year as well. This is a girl that was scoring 18 points a game at the Division I level last year at somewhere else. Now she's kind of got into that rhythm. I mean, just watching the ball movement, like that's the thing I'm seeing in this game, man. Like they're flowing. They're getting everybody involved right now. Yeah. I saw Nat hit a post to entry post pass to KK and she took it to the rim. That's what I'm watching right now. It's like, good Lord, man, this team's playing really well. Ole Miss doesn't know what's happening to him right now. So it's been fun to watch so far,
man. That's great to hear. What did you make of Emil saying he's 290-plus pounds and the roster saying 281? Which one do you think is more accurate? If he gets to 300 by fall camp, what percentage chance do you give him to start?
People keep focus. I say it a million times. You're focusing too much on his weight. He can get up to 300 pounds, but if it's all upper body weight, it won't mean anything. He still won't be able to anchor in pass pro. It's about building up that lower body strength enough and weight, proper weight distribution to be able to anchor in those situations. So look, Zach Martin's first year as a starter, he was barely 290 pounds. Robert Hainsey didn't get up to 295 till his senior year, right? I don't care if he gets up to 300 pounds and it's good, properly distributed weight, he'll be a stud. Right, he'll be a stud, and he'll probably start at some point in time. Will they do it against A&M? We'll see. See his development is. But there's a reason Emil was not a top 100 player for me. There's a reason for it. But there's also a reason that Emil had a 5-star upside grade for me, right? And this is the key. But it's not so much about weight. Look, anyone can get up to 300 pounds. Doesn't mean it's 300 pounds that's going to make you a better football player, right? And that's the thing is, so I don't care. I need to see it with my eyes. I need to see him moving well, because that's my big fear is, let's say he gets up to 300 pounds, but it's not good and he's slower. He can't afford that. He still needs to be that athletic, powerful kid. And so that would be the thing. It's how does he play? Saying like, if he gets up to 300 pounds, what does that do about his chances to start? Doesn't move the needle for me at all. Because there's no other context of, where is the weight? Is it good weight? Is it upper body weight? Is it bad weight? Is he eating a bunch of calories and he's getting a big old fat gut? Like that doesn't mean anything to me. It's, can he anchor and can he play with power on a consistent basis? And the other thing that I fear is, if it's not good weight, then he's going to wear down as he gets more reps on him. You know, that's the other part of it. So just saying weight doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't tell me anything. It's about the ability to play a certain way and the weight distribution. So I know that people are reacting to, like, every time a weight on a meal is announced, none of it means a thing. He could be 285 and it all be proper and he can play at a high level. You know, that's the thing is, that's what the focus needs to be on. Not, you know, hey, he's up to this, that equals this. It doesn't tell us much of anything, because anyone can get up to 300 pounds. Not all weight is not all weight gains are the same. Some guy getting up 300 pounds, it's good. Some guys getting up 300 pounds, you're like, yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
You know, like, I can speak to that personally, man. Like I was a big guy, and I was just having this conversation with my mom. As big as I was, I wasn't diabetic, didn't have high blood pressure. All of the things that normally come with being overweight, I didn't have, you know. So you're right, man. It's different for everybody. Like, that journey and picking up, it affects the bodies differently. You know, watching Emil, his hand striking is the one thing that I can say is, you watch him, I still go back to watching him go against Nana in live action, and just once he got his hands on you, it's like, yo, yeah. So if this is the only, imagine how frustrating it has to be for a kid to know, yo, I can be really good, but I just can't get my body to participate. to help me take that next step. Right. You understand how frustrating it is? Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people have that in life in different areas. Like, you know, I know I could do this. I know I could do that. I have a great idea for business, but I just don't have the capital right now. Mm-hmm. Or I don't have the connections to get it going. It's, you know, it is interesting. It's interesting. I'm interested to see how this offseason goes for the young man.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody's pulling for him.
Yeah, because he's talented. It's no knock on Tosh. It's just, you know, Tosh is what he is for the most part. Emil, mm-hmm. it's like with a lot of positions. It's the unknown, the excitement of what could be. You know, you don't often think that about a fifth-year senior. He kind of is what he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Emil's got a chance to do a little, something a little different. And that's what gets, to me, a lot of people excited.
John A1, this spring is unique due to the importance of the competition for the second and third team when it comes to quarterback and tight end, running back, wide receiver, cornerback. Which position battle has the most importance for the second spot this year?
Let's take quarterback out of the equation, Sean, because I think that's kind of a given, especially with Riley Leonard's ankle woes. That second, I mean, you have to anticipate that second quarterback's a guy that might have to start some games for us this year. You have to, no matter how he heals from this point on, you have to prepare with that more so than you did. Like Sam, one of the best things about Sam Hartman in his career is his last 3-4 years is just his durability. For a smaller guy to take the pounding he took his last couple years at Wake Forest and still just constantly answer the bell is something to be commended. You know, Riley's been able to take a pounding. It's this weird getting his ankle rolled up on thing.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And how will it heal and those type of things. So you have to be prepared for, like, if Notre Dame gets into the season and he gets hurt and has to miss some time and they're not prepared to have their next quarterback going and roll, then that's on them. So that's number one. So let's take that one out of the conversation. What are the next ones? Where the competition for second and third team, I'm going to say this, running back to me is out of the equation too, because there is no really second and third team battle. It's you've got your first two, and then it's about who's third team. And honestly, it's not important to me because I don't care who wins it. They're all dudes. So what it boils down to for me, Sean, it really comes down to of that list, it's about defensive end and corner. That's what it boils down. Those position battles for me are going to be the most intriguing, because even if we know who the starters are, who's that next level guys that can step up and give you starter minutes if the need is there. So I'm going both end spots, corner, then receiver is the three that I'm most intrigued by and to me are most important for how their development can impact this football team. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I can see that. For me, it would be, look, defensive end, heck, I'm looking forward to making sure, and Marcus Freeman talked about this, like, you expect what someone did at another destination to just simply transfer over, when they get to Notre Dame. I think he was speaking about R.J. Oben, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember. I think it was R.J.
Yeah, he was R.J. talking about. Yep. Yep, exactly.
And I don't know if he was just tempering expectations.
That's what it sounded like to me.
You know?
Yeah.
But for me, it's like that end position. It's like I don't need tempered expectations for him or Jordan Botello. Like, forget getting to the second group of guys. Like, what are the first group of guys going to do at defensive end?
That's why those backups, though, are so important, Sean, because they can push those veterans, or if those veterans falter, you've got that next wave of guys to kind of step in. Like last year, if something happens to Benjamin Morrison and Cam Hart late in the year, we're like, all right, they'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where I'm at.
And then, you know, for cornerback, it is a battle. I just expect Mike Mickens to come up with a freshman that's going to play. I just do. I just expect a freshman to come in and be ready to go.
I can't wait to see Leonard Moore in the fall, dude.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you that right now.
Yeah, it's expected to be par for the course, and maybe, you know, I'm going along with history. Yeah, and then, but you have three really good defensive backs at cornerback. And Notre Dame is one of the only few teams, shall I say, that coming into the season can say that. I really don't even care who wins the starting battle, because I know the third guy can really play. I know he can really play. I'm more concerned with nickel rather than I'm concerned with nickel. Like, who's going to be the first guy? Who's going to be the backup in nickel?
Yeah.
And how does Michael Bell
develop to the point where you don't need to go back to the portal next year?
Right. Yeah. Right.
I'm with you. Sorry, my facial expression, Sean, was not your comment. I just watched Matty Westbell just continue to just.
Oh, as long as she didn't get injured.
she just turned a little turnaround, Jay. She's just feeling it in this game. And Hannah's heating up a little bit in the third quarter, too. They just ended the third quarter. They're up 19. So they've actually built on their halftime lead. So, yeah, they're playing their butts off right now.
Hey, you know, that's what a coach is supposed to do. That lets you know the type of coach you have. She has them peaking at the right time. It's going to be about whether or not they have enough depth as they go deeper.
That's why I'm excited about next year with this basketball
team. Oh, they're top five team. They're top five team easy.
I mean, you talk about because, like, you know, you don't have Cass Prosper all year. She was a five star. Yeah. You don't have Emma Risch all year. She gets hurt. She was a five star, like, and would probably be their best shooter on, like, just best pure 3-point shooter on the team right now if she wasn't hurt. You know, and then you that doesn't even include like Kylie getting hurt and Olivia. I mean, Olivia was a All American the year before. Like, we kind of forget about that. Because of how good Hannah is, like, oh, we're fine with Olivia. But my whole point is, but what if they had both? You know what I mean? Like, you've got two. You can't press Notre. Like, Notre Dame is not pressable next year. Like, how do you change? How do you like slow down their pace? You're gonna deny entry to Olivia? Fine, get it to Hannah. You're gonna deny to Hannah? You get it to Olivia. And Olivia to me is at least tall enough to where she can kind of defend twos on the opposite end if they want to go with both of them. You know, Sonya's starting to get hot. If she comes back, if Maddie comes back, they get the five-star, you know, forward coming in next year. I mean, dude, they got a shot to be really good next year because the things that you and I talk about that are problems for the team this year, depth and size down low, if everybody comes back, those are both answered next year, Sean, just by people coming back. So, and again, there'll be an even more dangerous shooting team because imagine Olivia running the point and Hannah working the wings with somebody else controlling the ball, you know, at different times. It's going to be fun to watch, man. I can't wait for it. But they're to your point, though, the way they're ending this season is going to send them, no matter if they win this game, I've said this before, Sean. My expectation coming into the tournament was get to the Sweet 16. Anything after that is gravy because you're playing with six players. Well, now they're seven because it looks like Becky Obinmas or whatever. She's back. You give them some minutes. But you're basically playing with a short bench in a tournament where lack of depth can kill you.
Right.
So, like, to me, anything past the Sweet 16 is gravy. And they're going to finish this season with tons of confidence. And you and I have talked about how you finish a year can be huge. Because in basketball, it's not so much about the last game you played. It's about the stretch because you play so many games so quickly. It's about that. This team, this is a very confident basketball team right now.
They really are in a good groove. Can Bo Collins be a star wide receiver in Mike Denbrock's offense? Does Collins have big growth potential as a player?
Surprisingly, yes. I don't think most transfers come to Notre Dame as seniors with this chance to become way better players. I mean, there's some areas where Chris Mitchell can improve, but for him, it's more about the opportunity to play on the stage, right? I mean, that's really what it's about. With RJ Oben, it's you know, his game needs a little bit of all-around development, but he's not going to all of a sudden become a different player. It's, you know, can he repeat what he did before? And the fact is he'll have some really good talent around him and that, you know, a system that'll do this, that, and this other thing. But it's more so about that. When I look at Bo Collins, I feel like, and I've said this for, I've been saying this for actually years before we even thought he was going to be, I've used him as an example for making the right decision out of high school multiple times. Because I've said, I think Bo Collins could be a really good college player, but he went to a system that doesn't fit his skill set. They don't know how to use a kid like him. Well, Mike Denbrock's offense does. I mean, that boundary position is important. That vertical-oriented boundary position is very important. You know, being able to win outside is very important. And it's not just – like last year, the outside – that was go routes and post routes. That's all they did. Mm-hmm. They were like clear-out guys. I mean, he's going to run a million comebacks, a million stops, dig routes, in routes, over routes, stuff that requires him to win at the line and win at the top end. And Bo's pretty good at that. And this system will fit what he does well better. He's got to prove that he can stay healthy as well. And the other thing about Bo too, Sean, is he's not just a boundary guy. Bo can play slot. He's done it. He can play field outside. He's done it. So he's another guy that brings size and versatility that they did not have last year to this offense. So do I think he can be a star? Yes. Do I predict he'll be a star? Not really, because I don't know that anyone at receiver is going to have enough opportunities to be a star. Can he be an impact player? Yes. Because when I think star, I think production and name recognition. I don't know that Bo can be that just from opportunity, because there's going to be so many other guys. But is he a guy that can go out and in big moments make big plays and have a 100-yard game in a playoff? Yeah, I think he's got that kind of ability, no doubt. I mean, go ask Benjamin Morrison who probably smoked him the most last year, and it would be Bo Collins. Mm-hmm. You can look at the stats. He only caught 3 balls for like 30 yards, but watch the film. He had Ben spinning in circles multiple times. I've never seen anyone do that to Ben once, much less 2 or 3 times, you know, because he was so good off the line and so good with his top ends. And you're just like, dude, you know, this guy should be a lot better.
Ben probably walked up in the office like, hey, can we go get him?
Well, honestly, that's I was told this. That's the way that the defensive staff felt about Riley Leonard and felt about Bo Collins is partly why those guys were pursued this offseason. I was told that yeah, our defensive staff was like, there's not a quarterback we faced that was harder to prepare for than that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I was told that like Bo Collins was like, the DBs were like, that dude was a problem.
Yeah.
Like, it was a problem for us. And so that was a part of the reason they went after him too. So yes, I do think that that's part of it, Sean. That's not even like I think your guess is spot on, because I was told that. I was told that actually happened.
Yeah, I was just kind of throwing it out there. It's kind of a joke, but it wouldn't shock me. And I remember when we said that, people brought up the stats, and it's you have to watch. But fans don't have the opportunity like we do at times to watch the all 22. You watch it more than I do. But yeah, it was, you could tell just on a couple of plays, even on the TV feed, like, oh.
Yeah, go watch the slant route he caught on him to set up one of their touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
You got Ben's in circles. Like, you just don't see Benjamin Morrison give up that kind of separation when he's off the line. You just don't see it. You really don't see it. He's talented.
Bobby, yes, prediction on who will be the next 25 and 26 commit. And if you don't want to give a name, what about a position for each?
25, I'd say corner. I don't want to give a name. I'd say corner. 26, Sean, that's a little bit cool. I'm going to say quarterback.
And 26?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good guess.
That's the next one.
That's a good guess.
It'll be cornerback or D-line. Those are my two.
Those are the two spots. I was going to go D-line first, then yeah, quarterback.
But yeah. My only hesitation with D-line is, would they take certain guys
mm-hmm. this early? Right now?
That's my only question. But there's 4 or 5 D-linemen that I could, like, I could see that kid committing at the blue gold game if they wanted to take it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes. Yeah, but quarterback or D-line are the two for me.
In 25, I would probably say.
I'm pretty confident in corner. Being my pick there.
Yeah.
Especially with how this weekend went. But yeah.
That would be mine. Quarterback.
What would be your second one, Sean? What was causing you to have the hesitation about corner? What was the position you were thinking about? Because I could see it turning in your head. You're like, is this guy going to decide before this other guy? So I was curious about that one.
No, corner is the obvious choice. It's the obvious choice. I think there are some things coming. I'm very interested. The time frame, that's what makes me say mm-hmm. corner. But I do believe there's a shot. I believe more than probably some others that there's still a shot at safety. There's still a shot at safety in 25.
Interesting. We'll have to chat about that one a little bit when we get off the show.
I do. That's just me believing in the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
That are left. Yeah.
I'm more looking at it from a timing standpoint is my, more of my question. So that's, we'll have to chat. Here's a very important question, Sean. Very important question.
When you purchase NCAA football 25, which team is going to be your first victim? For me, is Michigan.
John A1, I'm right there with you, man. It's the first team I'm playing and smacking.
It's just, for me, it's like whoever's the best team on the game. The national champion coming from. So I guess it would be Michigan.
Yeah.
With all of the injuries at tight end, how effective can Jack Larson be in year one?
It's a good question, John A1. I think he can give you solid number three tight end minutes in year one because he's a tough kid, a smart kid. He's put on decent weight and he can get open. But I don't know that Jack is going to necessarily be a guy that can give you 20 snaps like a number three tight ends of the past. But honestly, the need for a third tight end in year one this year won't be what it was in past years. I mean, when they were thin at tight end last year, Sean, they would literally go 11 personnel and have Brian Thomas line up as the backside tight end, the 2-point stance and block, just get in somebody's way. That's basically what it was. So, you know, but Jack can give you, can come in and 13 personnel and, you know, be a good movement blocker. You know, put Eli on one side, Cooper on the other, and let Jack motion around. Jack's a tough kid. You know, he can catch the ball. He's a good route runner. He can do all those things. So you just don't want to have to rely on him more than just a little bit of some spot 13 personnel stuff in year one. And the biggest thing is I don't want to burn his red shirt. That's a big thing for me. Like, Jack's a 5-year guy, in my opinion. Like, I want him to be a 5-year guy. So I don't want to have to play him in year one more than 4 games because I want him to save that year. Because he's one of those guys that you give him that extra year to build up his body. And all of a sudden, he could turn into a pretty darn good football player. I think he'll need that year more than like an Eli Raridan, Cooper Flanagan, guys like that. He's going to need that time to really, because he isn't a naturally big guy to develop that. And that's why I don't want him to play, in my opinion.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Shamrock Sean says, still expecting Riley Leonard to play in the blue gold game. I wouldn't. I mean,
it's not like, worth it.
The thing about a stress fracture and the surgery you had, it's not something that the only way it lingers is if you rush it. It's literally one of those things that you just need time, you know, and just let it heal. Let it heal. Like, he doesn't need the blue gold game. You know, he does, but it's not worth slowing down the ability to fully heal is going to be the big thing for me.
So it is a stress fracture, huh?
That's what Marcus Freeman had said. Yeah. A stress fracture was developing. And so I don't get that.
No, I'm just saying, you know, supposedly everybody is lying. It's not a stress fracture. It's just a swap of the, you know, that's what I heard earlier today. Not by anybody from Notre Dame. I'm joking. You know, we had somebody on the show come in and say they're inside the program and it's all lies. We were like, oh, okay.
So if everybody, you're inside the program, why are you in a chat talking about it?
That's why we were laughing about it. And we're, you know, because then he was like, yo, and some people might remember, he was like, yeah, it didn't happen because of movement or training or anything. I'm like, so you got a stress fracture from sitting down? It was the funniest thing. It was hilarious. That's why I just threw it out there.
I'm so confused because I wouldn't be surprised. I did think Freeman said something about the plate. So
he did. He did
because of a stress fracture.
It's a stress fracture. That's beginning. Absolutely.
So I'm so confused.
No, see, I just threw that.
You
out
know, I was in meetings all morning, so I get a chance to watch your show.
I was being sarcastic. That's all. I was being sarcastic.
Gotcha. So confused.
But no, you can't chance. You're investing in him. No, you can't. No. Why?
Speaking of, let's go here.
Gents, how would you and what do you think Indy is doing to maximize Riley being out for injury for percent of snaps for the remaining quarterbacks other than the bike? Any insight in what Riley can do?
The first part we talked a lot about at the beginning, Sean. So, look, I just think it's I would split reps as evenly as I can with all the different teams. And I think you need to get those other two guys some reps with the first and second team as well, not just twos and threes. As far as what Riley can do, I mean, as far as workout stuff, I don't know that there's a lot more beyond that that he can or should do.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so important for him to be so involved mentally, you know, not just with the quarterbacks, but I would also have him talking to receivers about, you know, I'd have him over there with Mike Brown, not him, not even him talking. I want you listening. I want you listening to what Mike Brown is teaching them about how they're going to do this, how they're going to do that, you know, how they attack this coverage, that coverage. Those things are more important than, or just as important as you know, because like it's one thing for Geno to tell them. It's another thing to hear the receivers coach explain how they're going to get there. You know, Geno can say, hey, look, this is how you're going to read this. And that's perfectly correct. And he should listen to that. But then when you hear Mike Brown explain all the different ways they get to that point based on how the coverage is going, that's a great lesson learned for a quarterback, you know, and that's part of that development process where, yeah, you can't get the physical reps, but people joke when you say, you know, football coach, say get mental reps, get mental reps. People joke about that. And mental reps is used as a talking point a lot of times, or a coach speak a lot of times, but when it's real, it's a real thing when used appropriately. And there's a lot of things that Riley can mentally learn during this period of time when he's not necessarily developing the physical part of it, certainly.
And you know what? Maximizing the situation is just coaching. It's part of next man up. It's just part for the course. That's really all it is. There's really nothing else.
And next man up's part of it, but like if you're not then doing things to build up the kid who's out and finding ways to impact him, then that's where to me with Riley specifically, if you're not taking advantage of this time off, I'm not saying it's better for him to be out, but I'm saying since he is, here's some side benefits.
This is how we get better
playing. Yeah. Here's some benefits that he can do that he can't normally do when he's playing that you take advantage of. Certainly. I know of coaches that when a quarterback is out, they'll have him in meetings as they go over practice plans and things like that and get him put, you know, make him think about things like that. You know what I mean?
Do you think they have enough spring reps of him and even other quarterbacks right now to where they can really, he can lock in and still stay in the film room and get acclimated mentally?
Of him? No, probably not. I mean, okay. You know, there's only so many times you can watch those reps, but this is a kid who started 20 games. He doesn't need a million spring reps to evaluate him or for him to evaluate his reads. He can see it because he can, here's what you do. Like you have him standing behind the quarterback, like, or off to the side behind where he can see the defense progressing. Like, honestly, what I would do is I would tell Riley, I want you 20 yards behind the offense every play. I don't want you off to the side. And I know some coaches get like they want him off the field. No, this isn't a game. I want him 20 yards behind the quarterback so he's not in anybody's way. And I want him, as Steve or Kenny or CJ lines up, I want him sitting there going through, this would be my check. This would be my read. This is where I would have gone with the ball. And I'd even give him a little notepad, you know, or I'd give him the practice script and like, you know, this is what I saw. And now you can go back and watch the film. Okay, Steve, you made this throw. What did you see? Why did you make that throw? And here's what I saw, where either you are A, helping Steve, or B, you may be challenging yourself in a way mentally through Steve's rep of, dude, Steve saw that backside dig route. I didn't see that. What did you see pre or post snap that made you see that, and you learned it. That's the mental reps that make you better. So even though you're not getting reps of yourself, you can visualize that, and then when you go back and watch the practice film, yeah, Steve didn't see the backside dig route, you did, and you coach him up on why. Hey man, just pre-snap, you saw this. You're going to know that this route's going to come open. So if you don't immediately like this, don't be afraid to come back to that instead of just taking the check down or taking off running. You know what I mean? So those are all things that you can do in this situation to mentally get him feeling more and more comfortable with what the offense does. Mm-hmm. And then once the physical part starts again this summer and in fall camp, then his timing needs to get worked on. His footwork needs to get worked on. But his mental grasp of what's going on, he shouldn't miss a beat. And if anything, you enhance that during this time. That's what I've always felt like. If you're not doing that with your quarterback, you are missing a huge opportunity. Where, dude, if I can't get the physical reps, then I'm overloading the mental part.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then the physical part will catch up. That's what needs to be happening this spring. That's why I've said this, and I know some people don't like this. Well, you can have him over here. No, I want him behind the quarterback so he can see the same angle that the quarterback's looking from. Because you can see things from the sideline that you can't see as a quarterback. That's why coaches see things. You can see things up top, but he'll never be able to apply that as a quarterback, ever. Because he won't have the sideline view of it. He will only see from behind the center. It's the only angle he'll ever have, and that's where he should be when Kenny's on the field, when Steve's on the field, when CJ's on the field, and I'd have him with the call sheet, and I'd say, okay, here's the call. I'm looking and make little notes of what he saw and then go back and watch the film and be like, okay, this is – like and me, like, boom, like watch the backside linebacker. Quarterback drops back. I'm throwing to a corner. And then make those little notes, and then you find out if that's right or wrong. You're having to make a mental decision that you can then evaluate – with somebody else's film later. Does that make sense?
Oh, that's makes perfect
absolutely
sense.
Something that I would be doing with him.
Makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
And I think that is why you do what you do. It goes back to Gino Gadulli. This is why you change the trend in the quarterback room. This is why you stack dudes in the quarterback room for situations like this. Okay. Riley goes down. Riley could go down the middle of the season. Expectations doesn't change for this program. It doesn't. We're going to the playoffs. We're winning every game. Who is it? Steve? Kenny? Who is it? Because it's our responsibility as a coaching staff to recruit, put the talent in the room, and coach them and get them ready. Who's going to step up and lead us? Just because one program isn't about one person, it's not. Tell that to the Giants with Jeff Hostetler that went and beat the Buffalo Bills. No. Yeah. What about, remember Georgia walked in here with a true freshman quarterback? Remember that? After their All-American preseason got injured? Didn't he lead them to the national championship game and lose in overtime? No. If you're a big-time program, you can have a great quarterback, great starter. If he goes down, next man up. That's why we recruit. That's why the quarterback room is thick. That's why Deuce Knight is being recruited. That's why all these great 26 quarterbacks are being stacked on top of Deuce Knight, on top of CJ, on top of Kenny. Mm-hmm. That's what Ohio State's done. That's what Georgia's done. Yeah, Georgia, they wouldn't got Jared Curtis, right? They wouldn't got a five-star this weekend. That's all I'm saying, man. That's the change that I've seen Marcus Freeman make to know, say, look, we got to start stacking this quarterback room. We have to improve the talent. Mm-hmm. And he didn't just sit on his laurels in recruiting. He went out and got into the portal again. When a lot of us were asking, like, man, does he need to go to portal again? You know, should he play Kenny? Should he get a competition going between him and Steve? No, you stack as much talent in the quarterback room as you can. You just do. And that's what winning programs do. Get greedy. I'm greedy, bro. I'm greedy. I want Riley to be healthy. I want Steve to be right there. I want Kenny to be on his heels. I want CJ to be on his heels. I want to be greedy.
Right.
And by the fifth week, I want CJ to be able to start a college football game. I'm greedy. I want a full room. Let's go Alabama style. Let's do it.
So this kind of leads to this super chat from Michael S. He says, and thank you, Michael, very much for that. But he says, if Leonard can't go, what's your prognostication for the season, win or lose? And my thing is my prognostication, doesn't change. My confidence in them being able to reach that goal changes right now. That may change again positively once we see more of whoever the starter is going to be. But right now, based on what I saw of Steve Angeli in a bowl game against a depleted team that wasn't very good, or from Kenny Minchie in high school or CJ Carr in high school, shrinks my optimism related to what I've seen Riley Leonard do against Clemson and Notre Dame and, you know, all these Division I teams. It absolutely changes as far as my confidence. But this team should not, if this program was all about it's up to the quarterback entirely, then it's not where we think it is as a program. Mm-hmm. It's not. Can the quarterback impact make the margin for error smaller? Yes. But the quarterback being out does not change my floor from 10 to 2. The thing that changes, and that's the floor, the thing that changes is, can Steve Angeli lead Notre Dame to the playoff? I have no doubt. Can Kenny Minchie lead them to the playoff? I have no doubt. Can CJ Carr? I have no doubt. The difference is Riley Leonard, in my opinion, gives them the best chance to get there and then go on a run. That Ian Book got them to a 12-0 national championship game, but he wasn't good enough once you got there to compete with those guys. I think Riley Leonard is. I think Kenny Minchie and Steve Angeli will eventually get there. I don't know that they're there now based on what we know of them. I don't think that anyone can make the case that Steve Angeli is based on what we know of them. It's all projection. And that's where this whole debate comes from. It's the projection of what you think each guy can do. The difference for me is I know what Riley Leonard can do. And I'll say it again. If all we get this year is 2022 and early 2023 version of Riley Leonard, Notre Dame can beat anybody on any given Saturday. They don't need him to get better. Or if he does, it makes him even more dangerous. But 2020, you take that version of Riley Leonard and put him at Notre Dame, and people say, well, you know, he had this record against good teams and blah, 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 blah. And my question to you is how many times did Lamar Jackson beat Clemson when he was at Louisville? I believe he was 0-3, wasn't he, Sean?
Some fun games to watch, though.
0-3.
Yeah.
Right? 0-3 in those games. Why? Because they had the better team. Clemson was the better team. And that's the thing. And I've said, look, you put Lamar Jackson in Notre Dame in 2017 and nobody beats Notre Dame. Nobody. Nobody. And so.
Hey, you give the top five quarterbacks in college football to Notre Dame this year. And they're in the playoffs. Well,
and I think he has – you talking about the 2023 season or the upcoming season?
No, the 23 season.
Yeah, agree.
Give me Caleb, right. Drake,
and that's JJ, no disrespect to Sam, Dayton. But those are elevators, Sean. They're elevators. We said Sam Hartman's the ultimate point guard quarterback. And that's not an insult. That's who he is. Guys like Drake, Jaden, Caleb, they're elevators. They're put the team on my shoulders, guys. And I believe Riley can be that. He's proven he can be that. Guys, he took over a team that won, what was it, five games? Let me look this up. Because I don't think people, I don't understand why some people just feel the need to, because I like this guy, I have to do nothing but tear down this other guy. Mm. And guys, he took over a football team that the 3 years before he arrived went 10 and 25 in the 3 years before Riley took over as starting quarterback. In the 2 years before he arrived, they went 5-18 and 1-17 in their conference. In Riley's 1 year as the starter, they went 9-4 and won 5 ACC games. Right? Like, do you think that's just because Mike Elko was there? Or do you think maybe having that playmaker quarterback maybe elevated everybody around him? And look what Duke's offense looked like after Riley left it.
Mm-hmm.
Look what it looked like when he was there and couldn't move.
Yeah.
It was worthless. You know what I mean? Everything else was the same. That's what kind of guy he can be because we've seen it. Maybe Steve can be that. Maybe other people are right and Steve can be that guy. But if you think you know he can be that guy, you're lying to yourself.
Yeah.
I think Kenny Minchie can be a star? I don't know because I've never seen it. I think CJ Carr can be a star. I don't know. I've never seen it. I know what Riley Leonard can do. And even if all we get, and I'm not even saying, like with Sam, it was about if Sam can do this, 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 and this, they could be really good. With Riley Leonard, it's literally be the dude you were in 2022 and last year before you got hurt against Notre Dame. Be that guy, not an ounce better. If that's all you are, this is a really freaking good football team. But even with him out, regular season-wise, the prognostication shouldn't change. And if it does, then there's some bigger issues that you have besides the quarterback position. That's the reality of it, in my opinion. It's the postseason that changes a little bit for my prognostication if Riley can't
play. And that's why I have warned Notre Dame fans not to go down the rabbit hole that they literally have watched Chicago football fans jump down for the last month and a half, because there's no need to. It doesn't matter. Yes, there's a preference. Riley Leonard was not brought here. I'll say it again. Bringing Riley Leonard here was not Marcus Freeman thinking about, man, I got to get through the regular season. That's not why he went and got Riley Leonard. He had guys that he could get through the regular season with and win games and get to the playoffs. He's trying to win a national championship. That's all fine. But at the end of the day, best believe, this season isn't about the quarterback position. This season is about year three of your vision, what you've built, how you've increased the talent, and finally seeing it manifest on the field. That's it. Point blank. You can go down to College Station and win with minimum two quarterbacks in this on this roster. And feel comfortable going down to College Station, knowing you should win. Now, if you want to say Kenny Minchie is debatable because he's never taken a snap, I still think he's talented enough where you can go down there and win. You can go down there and win because of the team.
You're talking about A&M, right?
Yeah.
If Steve Angeli's – I've said this, Steve Angeli is the fourth quarterback on the roster, in my opinion, from a talent standpoint. If Steve Angeli is starting quarterback,
you're talking about physical talent.
No.
You're talking about physical talent. No, I'm saying you were talking about physical talent, right?
God-given ability, right? Fact. If Steve Angeli's Notre Dame starting quarterback going down to play Texas A&M, my expectations for that game's not going to change.
No,
because the team is pretty good, and whatever you want to say about Steve, he's not going to be overwhelmed by the moment. I've said this about him all along, and there's something to that. So, but you're not going to ask him to carry the day. Do I think he's got the moxie to make some plays here or there to help you win that football game? Absolutely. But beating Texas A&M on the road is not the standard of what you ultimately live up to. But do I think Steve can lead them to a victory at home over Louisville? Heck yeah. Do I think he can lead them to a home win over USC or Florida State? Yes. Do I think he can go on the road and beat USC based on what we know about USC? Yeah, I think that's possible. Is he good enough to then go on a neutral field and beat Georgia? I have doubts. But that's true of everyone after Riley. It's even true to a degree of Riley because we haven't seen him win those type of games. But what I do know of him, if you put the supporting cast he's going to have, I know he can. You know what he can do. So it's an interesting conversation, Sean, but the fact is to your point, who would I rather have a quarterback, 2022 Drew Pine or 2024 Steve Angeli? It's a no-brainer, and I love Drew Pine. It's Steve Angeli. Coming out of high school, I'd have had a completely opposite answer. I'd have told you Drew Pine. Guys, Steve Angeli's never thrown for 2,000 yards in a season in his life. You guys understand that, right? I don't think he's at 3,000 yards yet for his career of playing football.
Including high school, right?
Including high school.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, he's probably close to 3,000 for his entire life of high school and college football, right? So there's a lot of projection there. Coming out of high school, if you'd have asked me this question, who would you rather have as a quarterback in 2024, Drew Pine or Steve Angeli? I'd have said, Drew Pine. That's not even a question. Now, with what Steve is, how he's been developed, how Steve has worked to develop, it's a no-brainer and on the opposite direction, right?
That's ironic, right? Isn't that ironic? He might be the first poster child for development in the quarterback.
I didn't even think about that, Sean. I didn't even think about that. That's a great point.
Think about that. What you just said, he hasn't thrown for 3,000 in his entire football career, but he
hyperbolic on that. He may be like right around 3,000, but he only threw for like 1,780 as a senior. Man. His junior year was his first year as a starter. That was the COVID year, so they only played like 6 games. Like, this kid hasn't played a lot of football. For all those people that are just dead set on knowing, I know exactly what Steve can do. You know as much about what Steve can do as we know about what Kenny can do. With all due respect, the games he played in last year don't tell you about his ability to go be a championship quarterback. But they don't tell you he isn't either.
Right.
It's all projection. All three of them, it's projection at this point in time.
What is it? What does – I'm glad. As a coach, everything you just said, what it doesn't tell you, but from what we've seen of him this time last year and who he is today, what does that tell you about the young man? Because you just talked about it with the linebacker position.
Steve, what it tells me is Steve's view of himself is completely different than mine.
Yes.
Steve carries himself like he's
man
Caleb Williams. Dude.
Yes.
And I don't mean that arrogantly. Steve's a very confident kid in a good way, because it's why he's not afraid on like the first drive of the game to take a shot to an open receiver down the field or take a shot to Now I've said this, like, look, the deep ball to Jordan Faison later in the game, Sean, if he throws that against Michigan, Will Johnson's picking that off. Because Benjamin, that's a not very good cornerback in a bowl game for Oregon State. But it still took some moxie to make that throw. We know other quarterbacks who wouldn't have made that throw.
No.
So I can coach, hey, man, get it about 6 inches further down the field. I can coach that. What I can't coach is, can you please take a shot to a guy that's not wide open for once in your freaking life? You know what I mean?
Pull so like trigger.
That thing is, that's why Steve is where he is. Mm-hmm. But at some point in time, that only takes you so far.
To a certain point. Yep.
That's my point. That's my counter to that. Like, people, why do you hate on Steve? I have a ton of respect for Steve Angeli. I'm just giving you my honest opinion of the situation. This is what I see. You know, he can make every throw based on what? Well, look at the throw he made against Cooper. Guy was wide open. It was a nice throw. It was a 19-yard touchdown pass. You're a scholarship quarterback at Notre Dame. With all due respect, I expect every quarterback on the roster to be able to make that throw. I just didn't think Steve was capable of making it. I know the other guys can. They've done it. I've seen him do it. They didn't do it in Notre Dame, but I didn't physically know he had the ability to make the throw. What about the wide fade versus Jordan Faison? Again, against a better team that's not the backups for a crap team, that ball's underthrown. That ball gets caught here. That might be get picked off. If you throw that against Xavier Watts, that might be a pick.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, but that's not a knock on him. That's part of development. Now you'll go into practice, try that throw against Xavier Watts, get picked off, and know I got to get the ball out a little bit sooner and lead him a little bit. So what I'm saying is, you think that throw shows me? It doesn't show. He threw a wide fade. If you're on scholarship at Notre, I expect Dylan Devison to make that throw. These are not you're going to go beat Georgia throws. Like, he has not made one yet. But you know who else hasn't made one of those yet? Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr. That's the thing. It's like, so Steve has already surpassed what I thought he could be because of what he's got here, and because of what he's got here. I still don't know that if what he's got here is good enough to take him to that next level.
Yeah.
And if it is, great. I would enjoy. I've said this before. If Steve Angeli proves me wrong and he is that guy, no one is going to be more happy about saying I was wrong about Steve Angeli than I would. And I will gladly say, they went 16-0 because the defense was this. No, your Notre Dame's roster is not to the point where Stetson Bennett can win a title at Notre Dame. Couldn't. So if Steve does, he's that dude, and I was wrong on it. He is able to overcome the lack of having elite schools. When I watch, Sean, you and I have been at 2 practices now. Let's be real about something. Take all the grits and all the moxie side. We're just going to focus on spinning the football. When Steve throws and Kenny throws and CJ throws, it looks different when Steve throws it, and not in a way where I'm complimenting him. The ball just comes out differently from – now, that doesn't mean they're going to be better quarterbacks, but you can't ignore the fact that the ball comes out of their hands with they both have way quicker throwing motions. They both get more zip on the ball, and they both show a more consistent ball placement in drills. Steve's a gamer. It may be enough, but he just doesn't spin the ball when you watch him throw like you'd expect of a big-time quarterback. And I've seen Trevor Lawrence in person. I've seen mm-hmm. Jake Fromm. I remember sitting, I've told you this in 2019. I'm like, dude, watching Jake Fromm and Ian Book in pre-practice or in pregame, Ian Book throws the ball way. He's got way more arm talent, arm strength than Jake Fromm. But Jake Fromm had that grit, that guttiness that, hey, I'll make this throw when it's on the game's on the line, where Ian wouldn't. That's the difference between Ian Book and Jake Fromm. That's it. That's it. If Ian Book had Jake Fromm's grit, Ian Book's a much different quarterback at Notre Dame, meaning mm-hmm. he plays well in the bigger games because Ian could actually spin the ball pretty well. He didn't have it here. Steve does have it here and here. I just don't know that he has the physical tools. And if he proves me wrong, awesome. I'm just sharing with you all my opinion. And so I've heard people say, well, you just won't admit it because you thought, I don't give a crap about what I ranked the guy coming out of high school. In that regard, if I have a guy ranked very high out of high school and he's proven to be better than I thought, it was phenomenal. That's awesome. That's great. I love that. I'm just telling you what I see. And I'm telling you, thinking you know who he is because of what he did in backup minutes or against a depleted bowl team does not make him what you think he is. Just like what I saw CJ Carr do in high school doesn't mean a darn thing about what he can do here. I'm only saying this, Sean. If it's close, I'm taking the chance on the more talented player because the more talented player is going to get more out of experience than the experience. Like it's as simple as this. And I know people don't want to hear this. The more experienced guy may help you be better in games 1, 2, and 3. The more talented guy is going to make you better in games 9 through 16. The ones that really matter. That's the difference. What would USC's 2016 team season have looked like if they would have just bit the bullet and gone with Sam Darnold against Bama? Maybe they beat Utah and Stanford, mm-hmm. and they're playing for a championship because that 16 team, if they get into the Final Four, Sean, could have made some noise.
Yeah.
That was by the end of the year, nobody wanted to play that.
They were USC playing team. Really well, yeah.
But they decided to go with the older player, the guy that had played some, and Max Brown, and they went 1-3 to start the season, right? So to me, that's why I say because this the veteran guy that is kind of what he is, the less talented veteran player in theory, the younger, more talented player that lacks experience has a much better path of doing this throughout the season. And if your team is what we just said it is, then you're better prepared to make that kind of gamble early than you would have been when you had the Ian Book team in 2020. Let's say they would have had a CJ Carr type of player in 2020. I'm still starting Ian Book mm-hmm. because I don't know that you have the team to take that kind of chance because you may lose early in the season to Duke or Louisville or Florida State or a team like that, and you don't have a chance to play for a championship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you're not good enough as a team. This team is good enough to where, you know, I'm going to push those younger kids and see how they handle it. And if they handle it well and they kind of close that gap a little bit, then I'm going to maybe make that. Even if it means I start one guy, but I got a plan to get this other kid involved like Clemson did with Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence in 2018. Kelly Bryant had led Clemson to the playoff the year before. Why were they forcing the issue with Trevor Lawrence? Kelly showed he can get him to the playoff, but he also showed he can't win him a championship.
Exactly.
Trevor could. And Trevor didn't carry that team early, but he did when they got to the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he made some plays.
So you're saying he made a regular season? So you're saying Dabo made a regular season decision looking forward to the postseason?
100%.
He knew who his team was, and he said, we're going to get there. So I need to make sure this
kid is ready. You had a greater chance of guaranteeing an undefeated regular season in 2018 with Kelly Bryant as your quarterback than you did Trevor Lawrence as an unknown.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. But he knew, like, once we get past – it's kind of ironic. Once we get past the opener on the road against A&M, we got more chances to get this young kid into the game. And they played him a little bit against A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he proves himself ready, but there was a plan to work him up to that. It wasn't, Kelly's with the ones, Trevor's with the twos, and this guy's with the threes, and that's where it is, right? And that's the point, is why? Because they knew the ceiling with one kid was greater than the ceiling of the other kid. Kelly Bryant's a far more proven quarterback in college than anybody Notre Dame has on the roster, including Riley Leonard, because he led him to a playoff game, and Riley hasn't done that yet. So that's where I'm coming from on this one, Sean. And by the way, great, great win by the ladies today. 71-56 was the final. So Hannah went off in the second half. Maddie finished with 20. Hannah had 19, and Sonya had 17. So very, very, very good ball game.
That works. Them.
Yep, that absolutely works. So the women are off to the Sweet 16. So very, very excited about that. Wasn't that long ago people were like, I don't know where they're going to be. I don't know where we're going to be. And they play Oregon State, by the way, in the Sweet 16. Oregon State beat number 6 seed Nebraska by 10. So Notre Dame beat number 7 Ole Miss by 15. So onward. Onward and upward, my friend.
And Nebraska team actually beat Iowa this year.
Yes, they did. In a big shootout.
That's a good win. That's a good win by Oregon State.
Yep. They were a very inconsistent team this year, mm-hmm. that Nebraska team was, but they did have some big wins. They beat Michigan on the road the week before, a few days before they beat Iowa.
Yeah.
At home.
Yeah. Shaquille Oatmeal, thank you for the super chat. Do you guys think maybe Riley's socks were a size too small? That could cause some ankle stress. Very interesting in how QB2 shakes out. Mitchie.
Knowing who this is from, he's being a little bit funny on that one. So well played. Yeah, I mean, thank you for the super chat, my man. I don't know how it's going to shake out. And even if I knew for a fact that Marcus Freeman said, hey, look, this is a great opportunity for all three of these kids to battle for that number two job, and that's where it is, I still don't know how it's going to shake out. I know what I think would happen, mm-hmm. but I don't know that.
Yeah.
Because as you said earlier, Steve's not just going to be like, oh, crap. Well, they're going to open it up to Kenny and CJ, and I don't have as much talent as those guys, so it's been fun. It's been real. You know, my life as a backup's been fun, but I'm going to have to get ready to go play scout team. Nope. If anything, you're now going to get an even better version of Steve. Maybe it's good enough, maybe it isn't. But I don't know how it's going to shake out. And how it shakes out at the end of spring is not necessarily how it's going to shake out at the end of fall camp.
Fall camp, yeah.
Yeah. Yep, here's one we get a lot, Sean.
If Emil can't put the lower body weight on, would you explore moving positions? And if yes, what position would it be? If not, why? Mine would be tight end.
I mean, I would put him at tight end even now, even if I think he can play offensive line, but Tosh is just better. I would absolutely have a goal line package with Emil Wagner lined up outside of Tosh. Mm-hmm. Even if Emil can, I know, look, Tosh is better right now, but Emil's going to be our starting right tackle next year and he's going to be fine. I'd still do that. But you're not going to put him at tight end outside of anything other than the occasional blocking player when you're Notre Dame. Like, you're not going to put him a defensive line and he's going to be better than anyone you have recruited to play there. And if he is, you didn't recruit very well.
Yeah.
Like, he's an offensive lineman. And that's where his mark is going to be made. Does that mean if he can't be that full-time guy, he can't make an impact? No, again, I think you'd have a heck of a goal line team mm-hmm. if you used him in that regard. But because like I said, run blocking is not his problem. He'd be a 285-pound force blocking 9 techniques at the 2-yard line. And I'd be like, I'm running behind him. I'd put him over to the left side actually and have him and Charles Jagasaw side by side and running, you know, duo or something to that side in the goal line or inside zone to that side on the goal or something, you know what I mean, Sean? I would absolutely do that, but that's not a full-time move. I'd still have them wear the same number. I'm not throwing. Everybody in the stadium knows what we're doing and I don't care, you know? So that's what I would see him do.
Look, you just lock in with this kid and see what he's going to give you, you know? He's one of those high end, like you said, when you were looking at him coming out, high ceiling, man. He's a high ceiling kid. And this is what you get sometimes with high ceiling kids. Either they pop or sometimes they never realize that.
But he's still young. I kind of feel like if he doesn't figure it out now, if he doesn't get the weight now, he's never going to. I'm like, guys, he's still, He's still currently a redshirt freshman. Still right now. Now he'll be a redshirt.
Isn't that the nature of fan bases though?
Yeah.
It's like we want especially microwave. Yeah, we want microwave and development. It's right. one side of our mouth, we say development.
Right.
You have to develop. And then out of the other side, our expectations are, man, why isn't this kid ready?
He's in year three. Guess he's never gonna Yeah.
I think Dallas Turner, right? He flashed at the end of his freshman year. Everybody had these high expectations. Mm-hmm. Sophomore year, he took a step back. And then his third year, he took off again. The kid, the linebacker down at LSU, who flashed as a true freshman, right?
Harold Perkins.
Perkins, right? And then for some reason, they changed his position. They took him more off of the edge this year. Season wasn't as – he didn't flash as much. So now what do they do with him his third year? I mean, he's too talented not to be a really good player. But I expect them to elevate next year regardless of the position. And that is development. You have to go with the ebbs and flows sometimes. You do have some guys that immediately step on the field. And I already know this, Brian, this when I heard Marcus Freeman bring up Bryce Young, I was like, I don't even know if I wanted him to say that. Like he's already expectations for Notre Dame fans are already going through the roof for this kid. Like this kid has to come out and have 8 to 10 sacks. And it's like, he's flashing. He's good. That's what he's supposed to do. He should flash, but he has to develop. And you have to give him time. If he doesn't do big things in his freshman year, okay. That doesn't mean that he's not going to be a great player at Notre Dame. It doesn't. I'm trying to think. Do you remember his dad's freshman year? I'm sure he was rotational at Notre Dame. Bryant Young.
Yeah.
His freshman year.
I don't, because that would have been 90. He was part of the 90 team.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back and look at the stats. I mean, I know he played as a freshman. That's why he left in 93. But I don't remember how impactful
he
was. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
But and Bryce was bigger than what.
Yeah.
I was surprised that he was the only freshman he pointed out by name. And that was.
Yeah.
Because I've heard some good things about Kingston and a couple other guys.
He mentioned Kingston.
Remember? Yeah, but he was asked about it. Yeah. I asked him specifically about the young linebackers.
Yeah.
This is more of a broad, which freshman is standing out after four practices. And that doesn't mean that Kingston's not playing well. I just think I look at it as more of just, Bryce is flashing. And he looks the part, Sean. I mean, you watch him. He looks way different. I mean, because Notre Dame's still got, for the most part, shorter. RJ's not very tall. I mean, he's listed as 6'3", 6'4". He's 6'3", maybe. Mm-hmm. Jordan's short. Tuilamaka's short. The only other guy that's really got some length to him, Burnham's got some size to him, but, Burnham and Boubacar. But then you watch Bryce, who's like 6'6" and a half, and you're just this kid's different. This kid's got a different body type, really, than everybody else. He really does. We'll be right back.